Seltzer water is my therapist. I breathe into seltzer water. I drink seltzer water. I can't even drink still water.
I just think that every time it tells me that it's a flavor, it's lying to me.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right. We're live. Perfect. Thank you. Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery. A show not just about recovery, but spirituality and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show, Intern Takeover Edition. Yeah. I'm Josie, and tonight I have Kim right here to my left, and Sarah over here to my right. Emphasis on the because we already have Sarah with an H, so this is Sarah. Welcome, ladies. You might be wondering, audience at home, audience in-house, we have a live studio audience tonight, where is Sarah with an H and Christian? Where are they tonight? Well, today at 4:02 p.m. Eastern Time, they return to their original timelines. Sarah with an H is in 1920s Paris, and Christian is stuck in Hotel California. Okay? Don't ask any questions. Just enjoy the show tonight, okay? Like I mentioned, it is Intern Takeover Edition. The three of us are interns here at Most High. And so, Sarah, can you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Josie. I'm Sarah, and ex-professional junkie. Now I am a semi-refined professional here at Most High Media. Super glad to be here.
Yay, thank you. And if you don't mind sharing, what is your sobriety date or clean time?
So I have been sober for 2 months today, actually. Super excited. I have been in and out of addiction for around 10 years. And this time I am taking it the most serious I ever have and just really honored to be a part of this experience. So, and I also, I was an opiate addict. Mainly fentanyl, cocaine, anything I could really put into my veins. So, yeah, I'm super happy to be here tonight.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. And Kim.
Hi. I'm Kim. My sober date is May 9th, 2024. I've been interning here with Most High for like 2 weeks now, and I'm honored to be here. I've always been a rock hound. Just getting to know me. I don't like the bad rocks anymore. I like the good rocks, like literal minerals. I'm way into it.
Ba-dum-bum.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you know, like I said, I'm Josie. I've been an intern here for about a month and some change, so like 6 weeks. Sobriety is April 8th, 2 days before my belly button birthday.
Nice.
2024. Alcohol was my DOC. And I would take any sides offered to me. You know what I mean? If you know what I mean. Okay, so I do want to give a quick disclaimer before we jump into the meat and papas tonight. So yeah, quick note, we're not speaking on behalf of any recovery or sobriety program, okay? Mm-mm. And the opinions shared here are our own. They don't represent Most High Ministries, /Most High Media. We are simply sharing our personal experiences. What you hear tonight, you, what you hear tonight should not be taken as professional advice or guidance from any specific recovery organization. Mm-hmm. With that being said, I'd like for us to kind of get into just a little bit of the programs that we participate in our recovery. Sarah.
Hi. So, yes, I basically participate in HA, which is Heroin Anonymous, and also CA, Cocaine Anonymous, basically any A. I am an addict to basically anything, alcohol, opiates, uppers, downers, whatever you got, I'm there. So I participate in all of the A's. Yeah.
All of the A's and the A.
All the A's and the A.
Okay, so my primary pathway is recovery dharma. It is Buddhist based, but I have also done smart recovery and I have worked the 12 steps or part of the 12 steps. I did participated in the 12 steps for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I participate in a 12 step program. That's it. That's all I've got. I know of recovery. I know of recovery dharma. I know of smart recovery. You mentioned recovery dharma is Buddhist based. So does it also have, like, for anybody who doesn't know, similarities, differences between the 12 steps? Could you tell us?
Let's see. I think the biggest difference for me and how I experienced recovery dharma was that when I was in 12 steps, the quest was to look outside my, like, get out of my head, get out of my self-will, to look outside myself for a solution. Whereas with recovery dharma, it is much more introspective, as I understand it to be. That is the biggest difference, but there are a lot of similarities, the kind of parallels. There are books about it. It's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So for tonight, the three of us got together. We talked about, you know, what do we want to discuss tonight on the show? Mm-hmm. And we decided to do some recovery hot takes. So what are hot takes in recovery? Well, maybe unpopular opinions / maybe they're popular opinions. Like I already mentioned, this is our opinion. It's our opinion. It's our opinion. And we're just going to share off our personal experiences. Okay. So the first hot take I have here is MAT, M-A-T, medically assisted treatment, being sober? Is it being sober if you are getting medically assisted treatment?
Dude, I totally 110% think MAT is super important. I think for me as, like, an opiate addict, it was vital for my recovery, because when I'm first coming in, like, I am physically addicted to this drug, and the probability of me staying sober realistically without MAT, like, it's a very low percentage, you know? Like, it is just, it's there to help you and guide you. It's not like a fix-all, cure-all situation, but it is just an aid. And I think there is this stigma around Suboxone or whatever MAT program anyone is on. I think there's this stigma that somehow it's not sober if you're taking that, like, for your program. And it's just something I've struggled with for a long time, because I thought that, you know, oh, well, maybe I'm not sober because I'm on Suboxone. And I started doubting myself, like, maybe this isn't the right way. And that's just not true. I think, you know, it's at the discretion of you and, like, the detox or the whatever medical professional is helping you go that route. I think it's at their discretion. That's between you and whoever you're working with. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone else can make better decisions about your own body than you. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
So that's, like, why it's just so important, and why I took that step to do that, because that's what I needed. No one else is in my body. You know, it's just me. So I had to, you know, take that step to make that decision for myself. Totally. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. For me, it boils down to prescription. Are you taking it as prescribed?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Are you taking it and it is prescribed by a medical professional? Like, I think that's the big difference. Mm-hmm. That so long as it's taken in that measured way,
right,
I think MAT can be very useful and is necessary in many people's case.
So. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, for me, I went to detox and I had medically assisted treatment. It was vital for me. Mm-hmm. Prior to going to detox, I tried to do it on my own. I hear a lot of people say, you know, I'm raw dogging it. I'm doing it by myself. That's fine. That's great. You know, we talked about this the other day. I have two kids, and my first son, I had a C-section, and I remember people were like, you didn't actually go through labor. You didn't get the whole experience, pregnancy experience. And it was like, you know, ashamed for having a C-section. He was breached. And with Blaze, my second son, I wanted to have natural so bad, because I wanted that experience. Right. You know, I wanted to be able to be like, I had it. Either way, I had a baby, though. The outcome was a baby in both scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, with medically assisted treatment, the outcome is I am sober today. Mm-hmm. And so I don't believe in shaming anybody. Like you said, if you were taking it, you know, as recommended per your doctor, you know, my alcohol withdrawals for me were so hard. I tried to do it on my own, but it's like by day four, I was toast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I needed help. And so for me, it's just like, it's a personal journey.
Absolutely.
My thing is I'm cautious, you know, with me being in a 12-step program, I'm cautious in the rooms of who I talk to.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not pushing either or. I'm not pushing to do it. I'm not pushing not to do it.
Absolutely.
So, but to me, it's like if the outcome is sobriety and it helps your long-term recovery, then, hey, you know, absolutely. I'm not going to shame anybody.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because, like, I know, like, there have been, you know, surrounding Suboxone or any other MAT program, like, there is a ceiling effect, you know? So there's not, like, yes, there is a potential to abuse it, but the likelihood of that, you know what I mean? Like, if you're really truly, if your aim is to get sober and stay sober, it is truly a great aid. And I think the potential for abuse is just very low. I mean, again, that's my experience. I have used it. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I did abuse it, like, when I first started, like, a long time ago. But using it, like, in this moment for what it's for its purpose, it is a great aid, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, if you're willing, if you're ready and willing to be right. sober, then, like you mentioned, you know, for me, I used whatever medications I was mm-hmm. taking to help me cross that bridge, right. you know? Mm-hmm. Next hot take, if you guys are ready to move on. This is a juicy one.
Uh-oh.
You don't have to wait for a year of sobriety to get into a relationship. You just need to see how far along you are in your recovery journey.
Okay. Okay.
Kim, thoughts?
How far exactly? No, okay. I think it's a solid guideline. I struggled with boundaries and codependency in early recovery and early sobriety. So the idea that I could, like, the whole idea of recovery being a selfish thing was something I had to work toward. Right. Like, I didn't know mm-hmm. how to be healthily selfish.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I would throw myself into other people's problems to avoid my own. So for my early recovery journey, it was really like figuring out self-love. And for me, in early recovery, if I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to love you, it is at the cost of me figuring out how to love me.
Mm-hmm.
That is to the detriment of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And until I can figure out the self-love thing, it gets really complicated really quick with like relationships for me. And I would have thrown myself into that, and that would have been my focus.
Yeah.
Not recovery, not sobriety. And it would have been equally dangerous almost because like what if they relapse? I would go off that cliff with them. Mm-hmm. I would have. So for me it was a solid guideline, you know.
Yeah. But. Oh yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Great answer, great take. What about you, Sarah?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I know I'm one of those where like every time I got sober in the past, I was like, all right, here we go. Let's jump into like a super committed toxic relationship, full throttle. And like, I thought in the beginning it was, you know, like it was healthy. And then, you know, start cutting corners. Oh, well, making excuses for the behavior. And then I very quickly learned that, you know, it's not conducive to what I'm trying to do because like you mentioned, Kim, I do tend to make other people my higher power. And you know what I mean? So it's mm-hmm. like, I'm basically worshiping them. Like, what are they thinking? Mm-hmm. Like, how can, you know what I mean? Just going down that whole rabbit hole where, I'm really just not even thinking about myself and, you know, helping other people or being an asset to the community. Just like not even, what's the word? Yeah. So I just think for me, I can't hop into a relationship, you know, too quickly, especially in recovery, early recovery, just because I'm trying to focus on like not dying, you know? So that's kind of the focus now.
I,
Go ahead.
Sorry. I also had a friend who talked about it, like, figuring out how to show up for yourself throughout the calendar year. Because she would talk about, like, anniversaries and birthdays and these dates that come up that we need to figure out how to cope with those moments on our, like, find our own tools rather than relying on someone else and like leaning on someone else. So that's how she described the guidepost of like waiting a year. She was like, let yourself get through 1 year and see how it goes seasonally, like see how it goes anniversary wise, see all those dates through and then maybe consider if a relationship's what you're looking for at that point.
Right.
It'd be like a healthier approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had never heard it put that way. I absolutely love that. Mm-hmm. I love that because, you know, wintertime is, it's cuffing season, y'all. It's cuffing season. And then fall time, it's like, you know, the pumpkin patch and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And you know, the holidays. And it's and then, you know, spring fever.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I struggled
people
with spring.
People be springing. And so I like the way that, I like that mm-hmm. calendar. See, for me, yeah, I invested into pouring all of myself into my partner's problems because I wanted to escape my own. Mm-hmm. And so what I like when I read here, how far along you are in your recovery journey, you know, it's just not black and white. See, this is my, for me, this is my first time. I tried to get sober in the past, but I didn't really take it that serious in hindsight. So this is my first time. It was my first time going through detox, going through treatment, doing sober living, really taking the program serious. And so there was no, I mean, even now to this day, a year and a half, there's not a lot of wiggle room for me to invest into someone else the way that I want them to invest in me.
Right. Yeah.
Now, perhaps if I had tried this in the past and it's like I kind of already had an idea of, you know, maybe I worked the steps in the past and it wasn't my first time going through everything. And let's say I'm like 6 months into my recovery journey and I'm in a different place, then maybe. The other thing, too, is that do you think that getting into a relationship, because I've heard this, too, getting into a relationship and being intimate with someone, but, you know, just casually, do those two things, are they the same to you or are they different?
That's like, difficult. Like, for me, there is no, like, I don't do casual.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just, my brain doesn't operate casually. There's no such thing as, like, a casual hookup for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, demisexual. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that term, but it's, like, there's an emotional connection, and that's what. Mm-hmm. So like, the idea of, like, oh, just a casual hookup, like, that's just not how I operate, personally. Yeah. That's me.
Yeah.
But.
Well, and it takes time, and takes time with yourself to learn that part about you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Absolutely. What about you?
Okay. I love this topic. I think, you know, for me, can you repeat the question again, actually?
So, getting into a relationship.
Yeah.
In like the first year,
yeah,
being intimate with someone.
Okay.
Do you separate the two things? Are they the same? Are they the, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I think they can be separate. You know, I think as humans we all have needs, and I know they say like wait a year before, you know, investing in a relationship or being intimate just to kind of heal from some things. I know for me, like, I've had traumas and stuff, so definitely try to heal that part of me first before diving into anything in that realm. But honestly, if you're like just trying to have a little moment, do you, if you know what I mean, if you can detach and then go about your day, you know, good for you. You know what I'm saying? I think it's just totally up to the person.
Agreed.
I don't think there's like one blanket statement for everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, yeah. Like for me, I would go on a few dates with a guy and instantly get into a relationship with them.
Yeah.
And then, I have two kids with two different dads. Mm-hmm. I dated each of them separately. years apart. But I would get into a relationship immediately. Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah,
I go on some dates with you. We're talking every day. You're my boyfriend.
Right.
Now I'm investing all my time and energy into you.
Yeah.
I've never casually dated in like going on apps and going on random dates. It's like, I'll go on a couple dates, but once I meet somebody I like you and I'm latching on to you.
You are such an addict, dude. I swear to God. Yeah. That's what we do because I'm like, we literally use people like alcoholically or addictively. Yeah. It's that easy.
Yeah. And so for me, I was like, I'm not going to get into a relationship, a monogamous relationship, and I'm not focused on finding a boyfriend. I'm not focused on dating. But naturally, you know, like if a guy asked me out on a date, I would go on a date or two, and going on those dates showed me what I like, what I don't like. It also helped me figure out my boundaries and how to establish boundaries with people without telling them. Just flat out leaving a date that wasn't fun, leaving a situation that I wasn't comfortable in, ending, you know, hey, this isn't working out, don't talk to me.
Bye.
I figured out, you know, who I want to block, you know, what's a block worthy. Like, I'm not going to keep blocking people and unblocking them. Right. What's block worthy? What's delete number worthy? What? And so casually dating in that sense was good for me because I was still focusing on myself, but I would just let it happen. Like, I was like, if somebody asks me out, maybe yes, maybe no.
That's a good point. I really like the way you put that because I think too, like, I think learning what you like again and like testing the waters and just seeing what you're actually looking for in a healthy relationship is super important. Because I know for me in addiction, I don't know what the fuck healthy relationships look like. What the hell? And so, yeah, I think it's super important to see that good people exist and like they want to be around you. And like, how do you interact with that? How do you accept love? You know what I mean? That's a huge one. Holy shit. How the fuck do you do that? So I think it's like really cool to kind of experiment, like you said. So
I also liked what you said about your examples of boundaries, because like when I came into early recovery, I didn't know how to say no to myself and therefore did not know how to say no to other people. But the boundaries you described were for you. And that's how they worked, is you enacted them. You set your boundaries and you respected them. It's not something you have to tell another person. You don't give a boundary. Isn't something you tell someone else to not do. You don't tell them a limitation. It's what you do for yourself. And that was something I had to figure out. So I was really glad you talked about that.
Thank you. Ooh, man, we are
heating up.
All right. Let's stay in the realm of dating and stuff. Sober people should only date other sober people.
Why? So, okay.
You feel strongly. Go.
Let me back up my why a little bit. Okay, so I think in early recovery, that maybe the like intention behind that is like you don't want to be around your substances until you build up
immunity,
the empowerment, the immunity. You know, the spiritual protection or the armor or whatever you want to call it. It's different for different programs. Until you have those boundaries for yourself, until you can go and see something and not be tempted. Like, look, my DOC, my latest DOC, let's be honest, was methamphetamine. Pretty hard to find that on every street corner. Alcohol, a little bit different. So, I don't know. In early recovery, could I have gone to a show or gone to a club just to dance and not be tempted and not fall back off the wagon? You know what I mean? I don't think I had those boundaries for myself. I don't think I had that strength in me, and I didn't need to test it early on. So I'm thinking that maybe the intention behind that is, you know, protect yourself, especially in early recovery, like guard your recovery, which I think is smart. But I think for me, I have over a year sober.
Woo!
Amazing.
Insert applause.
But I'm just saying, like, at the point I'm at now, I don't think I would need those training wheels, as it were. Like, and I don't like the idea of limiting myself in that way.
Okay. Yeah.
It's no, I'm not saying anything negative about the population that we are as sober people. I'm just saying, like, why would I limit myself like that?
Yeah. No, it's a good point.
So I think, too, dating, like, having to date another sober person, I don't think that's a requirement. You know what I mean? Like, I think for me, I have, you know, dated in the rooms, and I think it would be cool to date outside of the rooms. I've never really truly done that, you know, now that I'm thinking about it. But I think, you know, I've heard other people say, you know, that it is like, it's not a bad thing, you know, like mm-hmm. it's totally fine dating someone who isn't an alcoholic or an addict who's in recovery. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people can coexist. You know what I mean? I know people who are alcoholics living in the house with alcohol in the house that their partner may drink because it's just a non-issue for them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol, you know, once you work the steps and you're solid in your recovery, it's totally fine if you feel that within yourself. You know what I mean? To mm-hmm. be with someone
mm-hmm.
Who maybe isn't in the rooms. So,
yeah, I've dated both.
Yeah.
I've dated somebody who is an addict, and I've dated somebody who's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I've talked about with, like, my sponsor of, you know, right now, full transparency, I'm in, like, a crisis mode of, like, dating. You know, who will I date? Mm-hmm. Who will it be? Like, magic ball, tell me. Is it going to be this? Is it Stacy? You know, whatever. I don't know. But so for me, it's like I would... The concept, because even the person who's I dated that wasn't an addict,
mm-hmm.
they just didn't get it.
Mm.
They didn't get mm-hmm. it at all. And so, you know, for me personally, finding someone who's normal mm-hmm. normal drinker, it would have to be somebody who, I guess, is like willing
right.
to try to understand as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would say a lot of, you know, he would a lot of times be like, why can't you just drink normal? Mm. Let me, when I tried to get sober in the past, I was dating him, and we went to a concert, and he was like, I'm going to get some beers while I'm here, and I'm going to drink. And I was like, can't you like have fun with me without drinking? Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, I'm like, it's a concert. It's normal.
That's right. Like what
he's
people
having,
do.
Yeah, it's right. he's only having two beers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I cannot. And right. so, I don't know. For me, it's just like there'd have to be like some understanding. I live right now with my parents. There's alcohol in the house. I forget that it's even there.
Yeah.
I've stayed there alone before. And even when I'm super duper stressed, I cannot even tell you. I haven't like gone to the liquor cabin and been like
it's just
breathing and sweating over it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's my parents don't really drink. They have it. They have a bar for when they have guests over, mm-hmm. so they can offer them a drink. They're normal drinkers, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's like that's different than if I were to be living with somebody who wanted to have like a cocktail every night,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I would prefer someone who is sober, like I am. But they need to have their own program, their own recovery.
Absolutely,
not. You know, not down my throat. It's the way I see it is kind of like if you, you know, spouses that work together,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the time, you know, and I've worked with people like that, it's like we don't talk about work at home.
Yeah.
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 I do think there's like a consideration that would be necessary to date outside sobriety. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, alcohol, especially being a part of the culture as it is, it's mm-hmm. everywhere. It's mm-hmm. in all sorts of events. It's, yeah. It's just everywhere. How considerate are you of your partner? Like there, mm-hmm. there would have to be some middle way.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm coming from a completely hypothetical point cause I haven't dated in years. So it's all purely hypothetical.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to reiterate again that this is our opinion.
Yeah.
Sparkle, sparkle. All right. Let's get a little bit past the dating, love, sex. We'll talk. Let's see. You don't need to hit rock bottom to get sober.
Yes.
Sarah brought this up.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Okay. So, I think for this, I feel this with my whole heart because, unfortunately, I am one of the ones where I had to hit rock bottom like literally every other week. to get it drilled into my head, the severity of my situation and how bad my addiction truly was. But the thing is, it doesn't have to be that way. Like, you don't have to go out and overdose and get to the lowest of the low to be like, hey, I need help. You know, I think there is power in being like, hey, I think things are getting a little out of hand, you know, like I need help. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think just for my story, it just, I'm stubborn as shit, dude. And I,
we all are,
you know what I mean? And it's like, so unfortunately I just kept drilling that point home. Like, you know, I had to reach the lowest depths of hell. Mm-hmm. But like, again, I don't think it has to be like that. I think for anyone who is struggling, you know, don't wait until it gets super, super bad. It's possible to get it now, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, this is a question of semantics.
Yes.
It boils down to, how do you define rock bottom?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard it described as, it's the point at which you stop digging.
Yeah.
And I think that can be of different severity. Everybody's stories Absolutely. Are different. Maybe it just is like, oh, I've noticed this thing getting a little out of balance in my life. Mm-hmm. And that point at which you turn and you say something needs to change,
right.
That can be your rock bottom. It's not going to look like anybody else's.
Right.
And that's totally fine. Like, even for me, I struggled with the concept of rock bottom when I first heard it, because I was like, I don't know. I don't know if it's quite gotten that bad. But I had gotten into some legal trouble, and I had been punishing myself and isolating myself for years. And I woke up one morning and I was like, I didn't recognize myself. Mm-hmm. And it was that moment where I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I need guidance, because I obviously can't figure it out myself, but I need to change.
Yeah.
And I was ready for it, and I was willing. So it's like, it wasn't necessarily, you know, I wasn't forced into detox. I wasn't forced to mm-hmm. go on the path that I chose.
Right.
But there was a part in me that was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So I think it all depends on how you define rock bottom. And
Absolutely.
I think it could be technically a part of everybody's story, or if that doesn't resonate with you, like if it's just the point at which you turn around
mm-hmm.
and you say enough's enough, that suits.
Yeah.
That's such a good
that
point.
Counts. That yeah. qualifies.
Absolutely. So.
Yeah. The willingness is very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Rock for me, rock bottom didn't seem like rock bottom because I wasn't willing to accept that I was an alcoholic. I wasn't willing to put in the work. Mm. And, you know, I always talk about this, but, you know, in society, it's like rock bottom. You kind of have, it's kind of like a checklist. You know, a lot of the times I'll speak for again, my experience in my family. You know, rock bottom, when I would overhear like my parents and my aunts, uncles, cousins, whatever, it's like, so-and-so hit rock bottom because you heard he's homeless, right?
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. they got a DUI and they went to jail. Or they, you know, it's these like certain check
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
But I remember one time a family member saying, you're, you know, there, being an alcoholic is just when, like, you have ruined your life and you've done these things. Mm-hmm. Your family hates you. You've got nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you have a job and you're maintaining and you have a roof over your head and you're taking care of your kids, so what if you drink a little too much? You know, you're just, who wouldn't drink? And that, mm-hmm. I hung on to that for so long because
yeah.
that was my life.
Yeah.
I was like, so long as I can have a career and, you know, have these things,
right.
then it's not a problem, until it started to be a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling
yeah.
out of work. I'm showing up to work drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm passing out in front of my kids. I'm lying. I'm sneaking around.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe to somebody else doesn't sound like rock bottom, but for me that was.
Right.
My life was riddled in lies. I couldn't even keep up with them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I like that I like what you both said. You know, it's whatever it feels like for you, don't be afraid to ask for help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to get help.
Right.
There's so many different programs and treatment centers and, you know, mm-hmm. you could, you know, insurance coverages and,
yep.
you know, free programs, free resources.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, but it's getting over the fear of the unknown
mm-hmm.
and being willing and ready.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. like that little hump, that
yeah.
fear, you know, I totally feel that.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the thing is that you don't need to hit rock bottom, but it's like, so you don't need to go to prison to be like, oh my gosh, right. you know, right. you don't have to tell yourself like, well, I'm not going to get sober until that gets this bad.
Like, I'm not as bad as this person. So, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. Cool. Well, those were the hot takes.
Let's cool down.
Do you guys have anything to add to any of those?
I think we covered everything truly. Yeah, all the spicy stuff.
Yeah. I had a quick one since we're interning here.
Yes.
Hot take. You can't start your life over when you get sober. You have to, you know, some people are like, I have to get back to my old job. I have to move back into the same place. You know, I can't have a reset on my life.
Dude, I was ground up, baby. Restart that thing. Let's do it all the way over again. But different this time.
Yeah.
I think it's totally, totally possible and definitely needed for me. I had to actually leave the state to hit that reset button, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. But again, leaving the state and also being ready and willing.
Absolutely.
And not just leaving and or not just starting like a new job just so I can like switch my stuff. But it's like, okay, now I'm in a better headspace.
Absolutely. Got myself together. I feel, you know, I have more confidence going back into this space, in this headspace, you know, with this newfound recovery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you repeat the question? It was like, I don't know if I've heard
that. Basically, what inspired you to intern here? So like you weren't, where were you working before? And the fact that you're sober and now you're hitting a reset, you know, not just like in your life, but now in like your career.
I don't know if it was like a reset so much as like I finally got traction in my life. Mm-hmm. I described my active addiction as like Wile E. Coyote over the cliff edge. Like my gears were turning. There was pedaling of feet, but there was no traction. I wasn't going anywhere with it. I was just tinkering in my garage at like 3 a.m.
For like on a treadmill?
Years on end. And it was like, I think I finally in recovery have, I don't know if it's like, there's nothing to go back to. I messed up so many opportunities. Mm-hmm. I just kind of like, I got so isolated and I stopped trying in my life. Mm. So there wasn't anything happening in my life to go back to. I had way back in active use, like a decade ago, with my girlfriend at the time, I started a business that didn't pan out. And after that, I was like, I'm not going to work for anybody. No, I'll just like figure out arts. I don't know. I'll figure out something. and didn't. Mm-hmm. And like a decade later, here I am with a huge gap in my resume being like, how do I get off the ground again? And it's opportunities like this internship that have enabled me to actually get traction in my life and do the things that I've always had an interest in doing, but had talked myself out of.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I had been like, no, I can't do that. I'm not good enough. I'm not all the enoughs that I wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, just like actually being able to be comfortable in my own skin, be learning the things that I want to learn. Like the opportunity to be here, I'm so grateful because... Yeah. It's giving me that traction in my life again.
Beautiful.
That was beautiful.
I feel it.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Yeah, you know, for me, that question came from, you know, I was in a certain industry for so long that then when I got sober, I was like, now I'm going to be like a real powerhouse in this industry. And I'm going to like, but it's like, that's not where my passion was. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, oh my gosh, here I am. You know, I hit the reset button by going to treatment. And then I hit the reset button by going to soberly. And then I hit the reset button by moving back in with my parents. And then I, you know, I'm hitting the reset button. I switched jobs 4 times. Not because, you know, of anything necessarily negative, but I finally felt the confidence where it's like if something wasn't working for me, whether it be the commute or the management style or what have you, I'm out.
Right.
I'm not forced and I'm not stuck here and I'm not scared to take risks and to, you know, essentially start over. Mm-hmm. But yeah, being here has been incredible. And I think being able to intern here and to have this opportunity, you know, like you mentioned, having a gap in your resume, 6 months. I mean, really when you're applying for jobs, your resume shouldn't be more than a page long. So if we're talking logistics, you put this on that resume and maybe just like one other thing from like the past, and you're solid. You apply anywhere and you don't have to.
Everything on my resume was like volunteer shit. That's all I had, but it was something at first, and it was something, and it was building towards something.
Yeah.
But for this to be in an arena, actually, want to be in is completely novel.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And you, this is your first week. And so look,
third day.
Round of applause for being on this show on your first week, girl.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. I was so nervous to come up here, you guys, but this has been so much fun. And I'm so glad that I got to do this with you guys. I'm super grateful and excited to be here. Like, even just the, 3 days I've been here, it's been so welcoming, so amazing. Like, I just feel so incredibly grateful to have this opportunity to get to know everyone here, because this is what recovery is all about. This is what recovery looks like. And to have a group of people who otherwise, like, we wouldn't know, come together and just lift each other up and create opportunities and teach us things, like, it's just really been a beautiful experience. So
And you know, I said this earlier, I said this twice today, but being here, someone asked me, you know, what's my social life? Mm-hmm. How has my social life been going outside of work? And I'm like, I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
This has been like my work and my social, and it's been like a ball of all these great and amazing things. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm lacking anywhere.
Right.
It's fun. It's fun and it's productive and it's positive. Shout out. Most High Media. Shout out Christian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So to kind of wrap things up, I wanted to do a quick little fun this or that recovery edition.
Let's do it.
Okay? Ready?
Bring it on.
Number one, seltzer water or Diet Coke?
Oh, God, neither.
Are you in recovery?
Yes.
What do you drink?
Seltzer water. Water and Coca-Cola.
Plain water?
Like legitimate Plain Coca-Cola. Coke. Who are
Mexican
you people?
Coca-Colas?
Mm, yeah.
Okay. All right. Seltzer water or Diet Coke?
Diet Coke for sure, yeah.
Seltzer water. Seltzer water is my therapist. I breathe into seltzer water. I drink seltzer water. I can't even drink still water.
I just think that every time it tells me that it's a flavor, it's lying to me.
I've tried.
I try them and I'm like, this isn't blackberry.
I'm gonna bring 6,000.
I want my money back. Like, wait, I didn't pay for this. This is my friends who gave me some.
There's a tier list of seltzer waters. Okay, Red Bull or Monster?
Red Bull.
I don't drink energy drinks.
Kim,
if I the opinions my expressed arm,
by,
it'd be a
the
monster.
Opinions expressed by Kim do not represent the recovery community. Red Bull.
Red Bull.
Seasonal flavor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ice cream or chocolate? Don't you dare.
Kim.
I'm lactose intolerant.
Ice cream.
Ice cream.
Yeah, ice cream.
I'm lactose intolerant.
Coconut ice cream?
Okay.
Non-dairy?
So there is a place in Woodstock that I go to because they can, okay. then ice cream if it's not actually made of cream.
Okay.
Yeah. What?
Decaf or caffeinated coffee?
Which? Caffeinated.
Caffeinated.
Yeah. Oh my God. I don't drink coffee.
Oh my God.
Okay. Prayers or meditation?
Meditation.
Thank you.
Finally.
Prayers. Because I'm a Yappatron 3000. I'm yapping all the time. I'm yapping to God. Sometimes I'm yapping to God and I'm like, God, I just lost my train of thought, man. Like,
I'm gonna start over.
What about you?
I'm gonna do a little bit of both. I love a little prayer and then a little meditation moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, final one. Let's see if kombucha, yes or no?
Yes. I love the ginger.
I used to be yes, but now I'm no.
Why no?
I don't know. I found myself grow out of like certain things, like certain drinks and foods for some reason. Mm-hmm. I just don't really like particularly like it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no.
I like kombucha. Yes, for me. I like anything that's like gut health. I drink those prebiotic sodas, even if they are a myth.
What flavor?
Kombucha, grapefruit.
Okay.
Grapefruit all day.
Fair enough.
It's a very, for me personally, grapefruit. I can't go wrong with grapefruit.
Yeah.
Sometimes lime things is too limey.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to get into the details
of it. I've heard it said that drinking grapefruit anything is a bit of a flex.
Oh.
Because some medicines, like Matt, we were talking about Matt earlier, that some medicines don't allow you to, so it's now like.
I don't know, but yeah, grapefruit is my go-to. Is there any words of inspiration that we haven't given the audience, or any message, anything you want to, any burning desires before before we wrap this up tonight, ladies and Kim?
Thank you for that.
I'm trying.
Hey, I'm a Kim. Last I checked.
I always say, hey, girl.
And then apologize for it. I don't know. There's something in the Recovery Dharma book that's always stuck with me that says, like, healing from trauma is not only our right, but our responsibility.
Mm. Say that again.
Healing from my trauma is not only my right, it is my responsibility.
Love that.
That activated something in me when I heard it. So when you said that, I just wanted to share that.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I just want to reiterate, like, if anyone is struggling, just know that you're not alone. Mm-hmm. And there is support and love. Oh, my God, look at that.
Not alone.
Come on, Kim. Yeah, so.
My favorite that sticks with me is continuous sobriety requires continuous maintenance. Mm-hmm. Doctors, they do continuing education.
Right.
They're always learning. Mm-hmm. They're always refreshing. They're always staying up to date on the latest medicine, the latest technology. Right. So my continuous sobriety requires continuous maintenance. Absolutely. It's just an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Well, I loved this. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that we're all here together. Check out the Most High Media app in the description box below if you're on YouTube, where you can find this episode and previous episodes, as well as documentaries and more recovery-based original content. Original, y'all.
OG.
So yeah, check out the Most High Media app. You can also find Most High Media on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Make sure to follow, like, subscribe, all the things, share. Mm-hmm. Shameless plug. This show is made possible from the Georgia Opioid Crisis Abatement Trust. Thank you. And thank you to our donors and sponsors. This has been the Most High Show. Good night. Yeah.